Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen, across the airwaves, show number 5 on the Madness of Mondays. 2 more to go, and this is a great one, out of Pearl River, New York. Talking Geek with Tyler Brook. Talk Geek with Tyler Brook, as I add the ING and how I back that out. Yours truly, Mark Mancini, producing this in Los Angeles, 347-205-9631. Show goes quick and 30, so catch the archive on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports, podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. Tell all your friends about it. It has been picking up steam, and we're just so blessed to be a part of it. So without further ado, let me lay the red carpet down, put that podium in its place, hand off the mic. First of all, Tyler, how are you? Second of all, how can people get a hold of you? Third of all, you got a great sponsor for this show. And fourth of all, a couple great guests, my friend.
Yeah, man, we got another great episode today. And I know I do say that a lot. I do. But for this occasion, this is a really great episode. Before we go any further, I would like to take a moment to thank Kitty Cat Rugs for sponsoring this episode. And I'd like to wish my dad a very happiest of birthdays. This episode is very special because it's essentially a crossover episode with the boys at the comic shop in Oswego. And as you guys will find later on, we are going to start giving prizes to anybody who can answer this trivia question that I will be releasing at the end of the episode. So if my guests would like to introduce themselves, where they can be found, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Tyler, how are you? We worked together many years ago. It's just funny that we both do little podcasts now with pop culture stuff. My name is Evan Coy. I am the owner of the comic shop in Oswego, 112 East Bridge Street,
the comic shop.
I've been there for about 2.5 years, a little over, close to 3 years, I guess. The store has been around for 30 years. The woman who owned it retired right before the pandemic, and I was smart enough to move in there and grab it. And that's where I met my partner in crime, local artist Aaron Z. Lee, who's here with
me.
Hey,
it's me, Aaron Z. Lee. I am a middle school art teacher by day, graphic designer, self-publishing, do it all, graphic designer, art, comic book artist, cartoonist, writer, author. I do all that stuff. I was a graphic designer and even a instructor at SUNY Oswego out here teaching graphic novel and digital illustration back in the day too, before my current formation.
And you can find him on Instagram at Pens and Petals, and you can find us online at OswegoComicShop.com. But Tyler, it's good to finally catch up with you. I feel like I've been putting this off for a while. I'm glad we could finally connect.
I know. Can you say time skip much?
No, I feel
it's crazy how life works. But we already get our first comment of the day, and we didn't even introduce the topic yet. Dave from Dearborn, Michigan. Wow. Love your show, Tyler. Every week, your guests are second to none. Dave, I'll thank you. Our topic today is going to be the world of indie comics. Now,
oh boy,
you guys
are
a little more comic savvy than I am. So would you like to explain to our guests, our audience, what an indie comic is?
So an indie comic kind of goes all the way from, like, kids making comics on printer paper and going to the copying machine and making a bunch of copies for their friends, all the way up to, I would even include, I think, Image Comics in indie comics, anything that's not Marvel and DC.
I think the standard is anything that's not from they call it the big two, Marvel and DC. And everybody knows Marvel being, you know, Spider-Man, Avengers, Fantastic Four, DC Comics being your Justice League, your Superman, your Batman, Wonder Woman. Indie comics runs the gamut of the highest level of professionals. Oftentimes people will leave the big publishers to go do their own works with their own characters, down to, again, my great-grandfather. He did a comic book when he was a kid that was a pre-World War II comic that I found, where it's just, you know, it's panels that he put together with his friends and their adventures through town, and it's just
That's wild.
Yeah, you need to show me that. But in modern culture, I guess indie comics kind of consist of a bunch of different publishers that do mostly non-superhero things, although there are plenty of superhero things. We live in a cool comics time where, yeah, it's not just heroes anymore. There's Western stories and romance stories and true crime stories.
Horror stories.
Yeah, all sorts of cool things.
Yeah, there's all kinds of wild stuff. I think maybe the thing that might define indie comics more so than Marvel and DC is that the creators have control of of the product. I mean, there's editors in the mix too in certain situations, but they have control of the craft of the entire story from beginning to end. Whereas Marvel and DC, you're kind of playing with somebody else's toys, and you have to put them back in the box when you're done. It's like an independent movie versus like a big studio box office, you know, hit. Where if you're doing your independent movie, you have your own vision. You're your Kevin Smith doing your Clerks 3.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, there's a lot of, you know, other money that's being thrown around, but you have control over what that vision turns out to be. It's not the big corporation making the decisions for you creatively.
But what's wonderful about the medium of comics, like we're talking about, like Kevin Smith can only do so much with a really limited budget.
When you're doing a comic, there's nothing stopping you from doing like a kaiju comic where they go to outer space and then, you know, they fight with gods and then they come back and then they have a sandwich. You know what I mean? Like the scope of what you do in a comic for anybody, even little kids, is unlimited. Whatever you want to do, you can do.
Terrific.
That's a beautiful thing.
And we already got two more comments. Frank from Delaware County, Pennsylvania. The comic book industry is blowing up. Love the DC Batman Comic-Con. I have to go in San Diego. Frank, let me know how it is. I would love to go. It is on my bucket list. And Denise from San Francisco says, hi, Tyler. Another start to a great show. These guests are so knowledgeable.
We're trying.
Anybody that
works
a comic book shop would like, what I believe, should know their way around comics. You know, that's kind of like a, I mean, if they didn't, that would kind of be like a vegetarian running a butcher plant. It's
I do like the chaos
of
that idea.
Hey, are these meats good? Yeah, I don't know. I don't eat them. It's like, then why are you here?
The idea of the chaos of a vegetarian running a butcher plant, though, I think that's kind of fun. I often go to, there's a, up here in upstate New York in the city of Rochester, there's a place called Swole Burger that has a really good veggie burger. And I like to get bacon on it. Not because I don't even really like bacon. I'm like a pro veggie guy. I'm not a vegetarian, but I like a lot of vegetables. And I'll put the bacon on the veggie burger just because I like the chaos.
That's awesome. It's like a bizarro burger where the meat is the topping and the plant's the main course.
That's right. That's right. I love mixing it up.
Right on. That's right on.
Yeah. So did you have any questions for
Indie Comics? Yeah, do you have any recommendations for a good indie comic for the audience?
Ooh, I do. I mean, some of my favorite indie comics ever are written by Ed Brubaker and drawn by Sean Phillips. They do crime comics. They've done a book called Criminal. They did a book called Fatale, The Fade Out. They did Pulp. If you buy one book by them, check out Pulp. It is amazing.
What's the premise of Pulp?
So Pulp is basically this guy who was a really young guy in the last days of the old American West, and he was a bank robber in that time, does one more job around the same time that in the 30s, there was that the Nazis actually did a march in New York City in Manhattan, and it's pretty cool. I don't want to give away too much, but he has a run-in with them, and it is – it is a very satisfying read and very poignant for our times.
Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips, we talk about creative control. They publish their stuff Criminal through Image Comics. And at Image Comics, again, it's a platform where they get out of the way of the creator and let the creators make, you know, put their best stuff forward. And they had a unique contract with Image, correct? Where they had like 5 years.
Yep.
So imagine going to a movie studio and the movie studio says, we will do any project you want for the next 5 years, and we will give you all creative control. We will say nothing. We will just put out your movies. And that was the relationship that they had with Image Comics for the longest time. Like, what a powerful message to creators that, like, come here, we're going to give you the one of the largest comics platforms to produce your product, and we're just going to get out of your way and let you make comics. How cool is that?
Yeah, I mean, but they've earned that respect because both of these guys have been in comics a really long time. Ed Brubaker is the things that people every day would know is he created the Winter Soldier. He created that whole storyline with the Winter Soldier forward. Like, all of the cool stuff that happened with Captain America after he got out of the ice and was brought into the regular Avengers universe is basically Ed Brubaker's idea. So that's what he's contributed to the mainstream. But he's much, much more beyond that. He loves, like, film noir and crime and mystery. And he's one of my favorite writers out there. Anything he does, I'll pick up.
All right, awesome. And let's not forget that many of the indie comics that currently exist eventually became very popular TV shows and movies. Off the top of my head, I would say three very famous examples are the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Hellboy,
yes.
and Mask.
Absolutely. Yeah, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, could there be any more of a romantic story about how two buddies in their apartment are passing like just a doodle back and forth, just an innocent little doodle that just made them laugh and then evolved and became Michelangelo and then the Four Turtles. And now it's gone on to be purchased by, I think, Viacom. There's been countless animated series, countless movies, countless merchandise. It's just gotten bigger. It's bigger now than it was in the 80s, where it was everywhere in the late 80s, early 90s.
It is wild to think about, because that was something that I was introduced to as a kid back in the cartoon, I believe, was 1987.
I think so.
So I would have been like,
yeah, that's when Transformers was wrapping up. So, yeah, it was 1987 to 1996. The last season was weird, but they got Tony Jay to voice Laura Drake, so they kind of saved it.
Nice. But it was just such a – I would believe I was 5 or 6 years old when the cartoon comes out. And it was such an important thing as a third-grade kid to watch the cartoon, to have the action figures. And I didn't know anything else about the world of Eastman and Laird and how, like, this had come to be, or the weird relationship they had with Stan Saki, who also does an independent comic, Usagi Yojimbo, and how, like, Eastman and Laird went on to just fund – when they found their success, they went on to fund a whole bunch of other independent creators, kind of to their own fault. And I think Aaron kind of knows the story there.
Yeah, Kevin Eastman created a company called Tundra, and it had a UK division and the United States division. And he, in the beginning, he had a plan just to fund a few projects that he believed in. He went to San Diego Comic-Con, I believe, when he founded it, and meant to get 10, and I think he left with, I don't know if this is the actual number, but I feel like he left with like something like 40 different projects. And so he gave advances to all these creators to create books. Many of these books never came to be. So I appreciate his creative spirit. If I had success like him, I feel like I might fall into that trap too, because when you find people who are excited about what they do, you want to support them. And not everybody has the wherewithal to bring those things to completion. But even so, he's been very successful with a number of things. He and Peter Laird still come back and work with the Ninja Turtles every once in a while.
They most recently did a book series, Ronin, which took forever to come out. It took 2 years to put out 5 big issues of it. The Last Ronin, I'm sorry. And it's about the story. It's about the last Ninja Turtle story. And it's been in the works for about 30 years by both Eastman and Laird, as well as other creators. So it's really cool to see that, like, guys 30 years later are still coming back to the thing that made them successful and gave them, you know, this opportunity to share their wealth with other creators and drive all these other books, that they can still get together and scribble out a few pages. And it still resonates with people. It resonates with people my age. I'm 41. 40-year-old people are coming to the comic shop, reliving those memories they had with the Turtles when they were, you know, back in 1987, watching that cartoon for the first time in third grade, or I guess not even third grade. I would have been in like first grade, I guess. I don't even know.
We don't fact check.
Sorry,
we don't fact
check. You're in your 40s?
I'm 41, man.
Dude, you don't look it.
Terrible. You kidding me?
And I'm in my late 30s, but people accuse me of being in my 20s all the time. But it's just because I'm around kids who don't understand how to gauge age.
Yeah, kids are crazy that way. And to answer your question from earlier, yes, I can think of a better romance story. Michelangelo and any piece of pizza he's holding currently.
Yes, that's accurate.
There you go. Yeah, and funny thing with
the
turtles, I have this one friend named Raph. He always introduces himself, "I'm Raph, like the turtle," and his birthday just came up. So I went to the Newsground comic shop at the Palisades Center near me, and I got a little Funko Raphael doll. So that way when you say, "Oh, I'm Raph, like the turtle," just hold out the Funko turtle. So I'm sorry, go ahead.
I often introduce myself as Aaron, like in the Bible. So I do that too. I didn't realize you thought that highly of yourself. Well, it's a biblical name, so that's a point of reference.
Yeah, I just try to – I jokingly have announced myself like Tyler, but I spell it the way Tigger spells it. T-Y-L-A-R.
I love that.
A little more fun, a little creative there.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
it's always meant to mix it up and be unexpected.
Yeah, I mean, I've always said, like Tyler Perry, but except I'm funnier, but he's making more money than I am. So there you go.
Yeah, he's very successful. Oh, Tyler Perry slander. I'd be careful.
Yeah, ooh, yeah,
Tyler Perry,
I know.
If you're out there and you want to work with like a nerdy white guy who makes comics, I'm available. I'm ready to go. Let me know what you need. Let's do the thing.
All right, yes, let's do the thing. But you said something earlier about how creators have control of their own comics. So would you consider things like Shonen Jump to be an indie comics?
That's a good question, because that's a huge thing over in Japan and even imported over here. But I'm not sure what the editorial control is over there. I think they may have some editorial things that go on that tell them what to do, or depending on their success. I think they could have indie comics for sure if it's creator owned. I get confused sometimes with the Shonen Jump stuff, that I do feel like certain creators, I think, have a lot of freedom when it comes to what they do. But then I feel like other books are more like studio books.
Yes.
Where I feel like it's a group of people maybe working under a pseudonym, under the direction of a publisher as to how those stories are being told.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't that's a good question. I really don't know. But I get the impression
I think it may arguably maybe the most famous indie comics. And I say arguably because the four best-selling comics out there, Spider-Man is four, Batman is third, One Piece is second, and Superman is first. So I say arguably because globally speaking, One Piece is the best-selling comic of all time. Well, second best, Superman. Although, to be fair, Superman is the pioneer of modern heroes, so there you go.
One Piece.
Think it very well. Well, if you
One
ever
Piece
seen
is
it,
just
it's
a phenomenon.
Oh, it really is. And it deserves all the praise it gets. It's been going for, what, 20-some-odd years, and we've just reached our final saga?
I think that, again, I don't follow the anime, and I know that there's
manga.
Over a, what's that?
Manga.
Well, I don't follow the anime. And I know there's,
well,
I know there's,
technically,
I know there's
you
over
wouldn't
a
follow
thousand
either.
Episodes of, I know there's over 1,000 episodes of the anime. The manga, we've just reached the 100th volume in the American printing, and I feel like in the Japanese market, it's maybe like
further.
It's like 104 or 105, maybe.
They cut stuff too from the Japanese market for America and a lot of books.
Someone was telling me the other day that the company bound all of the One Piece volumes together in a single volume,
mm-hmm.
and it's like a 6-foot long book that you can't even read. And I thought that was really funny that there was a publisher that was out there was like, let's just put like 10,000 pages of book together, and then we'll sell it as a novelty, which I was curious what that actually goes for. But somewhere out there in the world, I'm told that there's a gigantic 6-foot-long volume of One Piece that's bound together, which I think is very funny.
Yeah, but the world of manga is a wild world, too. Like the monthly grind of monthly comics in America is intense. I feel like it's amplified for Japan. But there are some different things that they do. It's almost like a NASCAR pit crew for some things, like Evan was talking about how studios put books together. That is a thing that happens over there too. I think there's less ego, maybe over in Japan. Like we need to get this product done. This is like you guys worked for me, but we're all going to work together under a studio name, or you're going to be credited in it too. And in America, I think maybe people like if it's they want it to be all them in some instances. And certainly there's examples of that in Japan too. Like I don't know if Osamu Tezuka worked with the creator of Astro Boy. And Blackjack and other things like that. I don't know that he worked with too many assistants, but I don't
know.
I know I've watched some YouTube videos where they go into a manga studio for the day, and it's like a whole studio of like 6 or 7 people, and they're all working on different things. And the owner of it is like, well,
really
I hated all these people because they're better
the
than
manga.
Me.
Like
yeah.
Toriyama is partners with Toyotaro. Like when Toyotaro presented his character, they were going to call it Virusu, like virus, the Japanese word for virus. When Toriyama heard it, he's like, oh, Beerus, like beer. And subsequently, that's how he became Beerus, after beer. His attendant Whis was named after whiskey, and all the other gods and angels were subsequently named after alcohol. And much like the turtles with the Renaissance painters, they all follow the theme of booze.
Yeah, I mean that's the collaborative process right there, where you bounce ideas off of the people around you, and it evolves into something else, hopefully better. I mean, I think usually it does, because whenever you have a few more brains working on something, you can see it from more angles, and that helps you push whatever you're doing a little bit further.
It really does, and it really just goes to show you that inspiration literally comes from everywhere. To freaking doodles, to having cats named after alcohol, pretty much everything else in between.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Aaron, talk about so Aaron does a book here called Wesley the Robot. And like, tell us about the premise of that. Where do you get your inspiration from? Because I always think it's amazing that somebody who has a full-time job and a newborn baby and a dog can crank out and a wife can crank out comics. And where do you get your inspiration from?
Well,
congrats, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much. Yeah. Yeah. So the thing about being a creative is that there are always stories that exist that you kind of elaborate on, whether they're kind of based on reality or if they're something that's separate. So that's always kind of percolating in your brain. So let's see. I started around 2017. I started making comics. I did a book called Preetus Pizza, The Human Son of a Living Pizza Man Must Fight Evil Anchovies, with the help of L.T. Provolone, who's like Judge Dredd with a pizza on his head.
Cheese on his head.
That's hilarious.
Oh, cheese on his head. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. And so that was kind of like my proof of concept book to show that I could do a comic. I was inspired by I was actually at my friend's wedding over the weekend, and my one buddy I went to college with and his wife now showed me that she made a comic. She just sent it off to Kablam Printing in Central Florida, and she's like, "Oh yeah, here's my comic." And I was like, "Whoa, you can just do that?" And then after that, I've just been on like a mad dash to like make as many comics as possible. But I made the pizza comic. I've made a horror little zine called Creep of the Crop. Which is just three different stories in an anthology book, like that classic EC stuff that I love so much. And my current thing, Wesley the Robot, it's the most personal story I have. It's kind of a direct amplification of things that really did happen. Some things really happened, some things didn't, of my first couple of years of college. So I was on a radio show you can do a college radio show. We did an indie rock radio show, and I did that with a couple of buddies of mine. And one day the weather emergency system in all the gears just started going off in the middle of the talking segment. I was like, whoa, Wes is going crazy over here, because it was WES. And that's kind of the genesis of this idea. So the story is basically that same thing, except instead of it just being that one-off like noise, in my story, he assembles himself into like a physical body to like learn how to dance, because we played a really dancey indie rock song and like we danced around the studio and he wanted to do that too. And so he became a being in hopes of doing that. And he discovers his love for coffee and a possible romantic relationship and fighting evil corn demons. And, a guy with a cowboy hat and a flaming sword who can fly around. And, a man who's also an apple tree and, other.
Just to make
fun,
sure we're on the same sheet of music. Corn demons.
Yeah.
Are you talking like stalks of corn demons or like corn demons like they're modeled after the band Corn?
More like the vegetable.
All right. So there you go.
It's like Dormammu with a corn cob head.
Yes, corn kabu.
Okay.
Not really that, but.
So he's a popcorn head.
Spoilers. Have you read my unfinished draft?
No, but I'm familiar with science of popcorn.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah, and another thing, too, because I used to do a music blog for a number of years, so I have interviews with bands that I've liked over the years. They're kind of like my evergreen stuff that I love. Like, I interviewed members of the band The Faint, Interpol, Casket Girls, Secret Machines, Berenstain.
All right, we got to get back on the comics track here.
We have almost 5 minutes left of our show, so I'm going to ask the trivia question. Which voice actor voiced Raphael from the 80s series as well as Donatello in the 2012 series? First person to answer correctly will receive an official I Can't English Today sticker.
When you told me this, I had one guess. I'm not going to say it, obviously, but I had one guess because I only knew one voice actor.
I know. It's crazy that everybody always thinks of that one guy when they think of turtles. You know, it's kind of like a McDonald's menu. You always think Big Mac, but you know they have other stuff.
True. True. I have a name in my head, but I know it's wrong because it's the guy who voiced the Hulk, and why would he do that?
I don't know. I mean,
I'll tell you who it is after the show. Yeah.
All right, sounds awesome, man. And we have officially 5 minutes left. So if you guys are scratching your head, scratch a little harder.
Oh, we're scratching our head? Do you want us to talk about more indie comics?
Oh, yeah. Why don't you talk about some more indie comics as we wrap this episode up? Honestly, I feel like Hellboy was done twice. I don't know about you. I think I like it better, even though Liz and Hellboy ended up, which was weird because they had more of a brother-sister vibe. Even though I guess that would basically be like the same thing that She-Hulk and the Hulk ending up together.
Who's the character that Hellboy is like has a sibling-like relationship with?
Liz Sherman.
Okay, they changed it for the movie to be more of a romantic thing?
Yeah, she was played by Stella Blair in the two movies. The Fire Girl?
I want to love the Hellboy movie so much.
There's a lot to love in there.
It's such a rich property, and I think the premise is so great of, I always say it wrong, the BRPD.
BPRD.
BPRD, thank you. I always say that incorrectly. Bureau of Paranormal Research and Development, is that what it is?
That's right.
Pretty much, yeah.
Hellboy's origins in the book, Mike Mignola, who is the artist and writer, and his rich history of, like, all the different lores that he goes into and the research that he does and the stories that he tells and the really weird, creepy art. I think it can translate to the big screen. It just hasn't quite gotten there yet. And it's one of my favorite independent books. Yeah. I first became aware, well, I knew of Hellboy, but when Hellboy crossed over with Savage Dragon in issue 35 back in 1990, let's say 95, 96, I was like, you know, I'm 13, 14. I'm like, boy, what do I got to – I got to get into this. I got to figure this out. Oh, Aaron just pulled out a book here, too. It's The Amazing Screw-On Head and Other Curious Objects by Mike Mignola.
I highly recommend this book. It's very, like, Hellboy adjacent, but just very fun book. There's so much cool stuff about Mike Mignola. You can kind of trace it all the way back to Bernie Wrightson, who's, like, one of the classic, like, horror artists, who, of course, is influenced by all the EC stuff. But then he in his own right influenced like Mike Mignola and Kelly Jones and Kyle Hotz, and there's a vibe to a Mike Mignola comic, to a Hellboy comic, that doesn't translate to the movie screen. And I would say even if you think the premise is interesting but it didn't quite do it for you, find a Hellboy comic. Read Seeds of Destruction or something like that. Beautiful, beautiful, interesting, compelling stuff with a sense of humor, a heart, and just a bunch of oddity.
And something about like all these movies that are made from these properties, because when you make something that's not animated and it doesn't have that visual flavor of the comic, even if it really tries hard, like, and it does a nice job trying to adapt stuff, like, it's a good advertisement for the comic because the comic has like all that flavor in abundance, like to capture.
And at
Viola,
this point, we are going to close it up. Would you guys like to tell you where you can be found, et cetera, et cetera?
I can be found. I have a website, pensandpedals.com. I'm also at pensandpedals on most social media. Instagram I'm most active on. So if you want to see my process and comics and stuff, it's all on there. We're at oswegocomicshop.com. We're on Facebook. I don't know what our Facebook is. But we also do a stream every Thursday on Twitch, twitch.tv/oswegocomicshop.
All right, awesome. And as usual, you can find me at geektalkwithtyler.com. There you can see my social media pages. You can see my guests, including these two lovely gentlemen right here, the guests I've had for my other show, all my merch. And speaking of, it's about time I announced the trivia question. The voice actor who voiced both the 80s Raphael and the 2012 Donatello is none other than the talented Rob Paulson.
We didn't get any
correct answers on that, so unfortunately nobody wins. But stay tuned next week as I will have another exciting question and another wonderful prize for all you coming up. And once again, stay geeky out there, and thank you so much for tuning in. Evan, Aaron, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to talk comics with me today.
Thanks, man. Absolutely. Anytime.
All right, awesome. Stay geeky, everyone.
Take care.